I went to have coffee with our beloved Kayla a couple weeks ago at her home. I had poured us both a cup, as it's a lot easier for somebody who's not in a wheelchair to carry two cups of coffee. And then I opened the refrigerator to get myself some cream. Kayla knows how I like my coffee. And I was surprised to find nothing but a single carton of cream in her refrigerator. I looked at Kayla and said, "My friend, would it be helpful if we talked about some community support for food or meals?" And she casually responded, "Oh no, I stopped eating." Pause. Rewind about 25 years. I'm a kid, one of just a few kids at a predominantly LGBTQ church in Minneapolis at the height of the AIDS crisis. The building is made of cinder blocks, cement ones. We all sit on folding chairs, not a pew in sight. Kayla sits with her head tilted in that Kayla way, slightly sideways, as she listens with her whole soul to the words of liturgy. She is wearing a pink cotton jumpsuit in my memory. Her hair is dark brown. She has her walking sticks, as she called them, sitting beside her. I didn't know her well, but she was unforgettable in her grace-filled way of walking with her sticks, as she called them, as though they were a part of her body. They let her move against gravity and at all odds against cerebral palsy. As a child, I found her remarkable. I didn't know at the time that when she was a child, she didn't think she would live into the adulthood she was then living. Back to Kayla's kitchen 2 weeks ago. I had known Kayla would seek to die well. To die in her home, to die with the community of Lyndale surrounding her, to die as much on her own terms as humanly possible. We talked about this in the abstract for years. So had our previous pastor at Lyndale, Don, had those conversations with her. But now? Now? Why? I listened. She unfurled her story of living in a body that, as much as she loved it, was increasingly leaving her control, that was becoming a terrifying daily trap that had outlived her understanding of her life expectancy by decades and decades. I peppered her with questions. Not to change her mind, this is Kayla after all, but to seek to understand our beloved mystic friend who has, for many years already, lived somewhere between here and eternity. Eventually, I realized I was mad, and in my own process of realization and grief, "I'm not ready for this," I said out loud. Kayla tilted her head in her Kayla way and listened with her whole soul to me. So Jesus called them and said to them, "You know that among the Gentiles, those whom they recognize as their rulers lord it over them, and their great ones are tyrants over them. But it is not so among you. Whoever wishes to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wishes to become first among you must be slave of all. For the Son, the child of humanity, came not to be served but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." I was reading this passage again this week in preparation for this sermon, and it made me just a little bit grumpy. I'm not so oblivious as to John and James to think that following in the way of Jesus is going to look like a heavenly royal banquet where my biggest concern is the seating arrangement. I have the benefit of hindsight over James and John, and I know the end of the Jesus story. But this language of being a servant or a slave has always seemed far more problematic to me than useful, let alone the floodgates of what church nerds call bad atonement theologies that have streamed from this word, often translated as ransom. I called Kayla Friday morning for one of our now regular "How is life without eating?" chats. Surprisingly unchanged, she told me, and we moved on. I decided maybe our mystic in residence might have some words of wisdom to share on this passage. She did, after all, go to seminary. She came close to ordination, but was too far ahead of her time for the church to catch up, as she was openly lesbian and visibly disabled. We commiserated about this text. But Kayla said this passage also makes her think of one of her favorite hymns that we sing at Lindale. "Won't you let me be your servant?" She doesn't like the word in that song either, but she loves singing that song to each other, as she puts it. For her, the point of the song and hence of this passage is that, quote, being a servant is a part of everybody's role. She said, "Jesus is trying to remind us that it's not hierarchy we live in, but community. It's not about those words, servant and slave. It's about how we pick up other people's pieces when they can't pick them up for themselves. It's about figuring out how to live with and attend to one another. It's not about theology. We don't have any other place in our culture that we can do this. Nowhere else has roots in community like this, like church, like this church." And she paused. "So there. There's a sermon and a half for you," she said, and laughed. I agree. It's all of this, and it is those two words too, servant and slave. I think we're supposed to bristle at them as people who are not in servitude or slavery. We're supposed to recognize that when those roles are forced, they are horrifying. Jesus lived in a time of slavery. He knew what that meant. But Jesus is imagining a different world. This is not some world where people are bound in servitude or slavery to a caste of tyrants. This is a world where there are no people who are just tyrants or just slaves. In this world, we recognize that we all have the capacity to be both, and then choose to find the balance of a life freely given and of freely receiving. It's about being famous, not like a tyrant, but in the way the Arab American poet Naomi Shihab Nye describes being famous. I want to be famous in the way a pulley is famous, or a buttonhole. Not because it did anything spectacular, but because it never forgot what it could do. Which leads me to this season we call stewardship, or tending to the gifts of the Holy One, the one that the Holy One has given us so we might be of service, of use, or even famous in the sense of a buttonhole to those in this community and beyond. This is the time we remember that all we have does not actually belong to us. That's just a lie of capitalism and of empires past and present. What we have is the opportunity to make right relationship with each other through how we choose to act on our resources of time, talent, and tithe so that we can do awesome things together. When Kayla's body returns to creation and her creator, her home will also, as she puts it, come full circle. She bought her home from Michael Branscombe, another Lindale member, almost 20 years ago in what she called a relationship that was holy and life-giving and has kept on giving well beyond his death. Because of her commitment to the kind of community Jesus is talking about in our passage for today, Kayla will be offering the asset of her home back to Lyndale after her passing. In her words, "I wanted to keep giving after me. It's about gratitude." Our stewardship season this year is root to rise. For some of us, it is time to dig deep and think about what it might mean to keep giving to this community in gratitude after we are gone, on whatever scale that might be. For others, it's time to dig deep and think about what talents and time we might offer this community in service of a committee or for a great gathering or all the other ways we show up for one another. For all of us, it is time to dig deep and think about what measure of the financial resources in our lives it would feel right and good to offer back regularly to the holy work of this community, what we call a pledge. Monthly planned contributions are what allow us to keep the lights and heat on, and our staff working in service of beloved community here and now. Our goal this year is that each of us will commit to a tithe or a 10% increase on our pledge from last year. While it isn't up to me to decide how that money is spent, it could allow us to cover something like an increase in our health insurance coverage for our staff, or a new ministry venture we have yet to imagine, or a community resource fund, or a reparations fund. The possibilities are endless when we gather what we have together in service of one another. Kayla often talks about her home as a treehouse. That's somehow fitting this year. As we enter this season of giving, of rooting to rise, my challenge to you is to try to be like oak trees. If I were Jesus, I would create a parable of the oak tree to explain this whole service thing to James and John. Oak trees do not just root deep. They root wide. They grab hold of each other's roots under the soil. They know that when they are connected at the root, they are stronger. They can rise and rise into the sky as they grow and be stabilized by one another. This is why the oak trees were some of the only trees standing after Hurricane Katrina, baffling passersby. For miles and miles, they were an interconnected grid under the soil, holding each other up despite the strength of the storm. May we be so rooted, so strong, so baffling to passersby through the storms of our living and our dying together. Amen.